Let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sada, virya, and mindfully, we shall start the puja. Namo Bunsi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bunsi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bunsi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Guansing Pusa. Namo Guansing Pusa. Namo Guansing Pusa. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, you can be seated. Then turn to page 1. We will start with the Vandana. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micchacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya majjhapamadatthana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Now we will chant the Padipa Puja, offering of light. Ganna sarapaditena Dipena tamadang sina Tiloka dipang sambuddhang Pujayami tamonudang Ganda sambarayutena Dopena hang sugang hina Pujaye pujaniyang pang Puja bhajana mutamang Vanna ganda guno petang etang kasuma santatin pujayami monindasa Siri pada sarorohe puje mi budang kesumena nena punena matena ca hotu mokang pupang milayati yata idang me kayo tatayati vinasa bawang.Adiva setuno bante paniyang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang Adiva setuno bante pale parikapitang anukampang upadayaPatigan hatu mutamang Adiva setuno bante Bojanang parikapitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hatu mutamang Now we will do the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all the puja offering.Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha brings forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear DhammaThat cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense, which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits.May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body.So that we will diligently and sincerely strive on Sila, Samadhi, and Panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free Nibbana. Making of overall aspiration. The power of all these merits, born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of Sadda,Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or power, sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.Okay, let us pay respect to Tripuja. Badang Pujayami Dhammang Pujayami Sanghang Pujayami Okay, you can be seated.We can have half an hour of meditation. Okay. For those who already know how to meditate, you can straight away start your meditation. For those who still need to train their mind, you can also proceed to use the skillful means to train. For those who have already developed the stability of spiritual faculty, you can straight away develop your meditation. Okay, I will ring the bell after about 30 minutes. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have enough, slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Then, before we do the invocation to the devas, here are some notes, the Bodhisattva vow. These are the printed correct copy already. So we have to thank the photostat shop for giving us new copies. Also, they make a mistake, I think. Just pass it on. Pass it on. Distribute. Pass it back. Pass some over here. You all can have one each. If you want more than one, you can request. I still have. Here. Come, put it. Enough? Oh, okay. That day there were some problem with the photostatic. I think the shop made some mistake, so they have given us a new set, which is very clear now. Just leave it there. Thanks. Okay, let's quickly look at it, check whether any more mistake shouldn't be any. So page 1 is just an introduction to the Bodhisattva vow. Then the next 3 pages is about taking of the Bodhisattva vow. This one I have incorporated a few more important understanding. The making of special aspiration to walk the Bodhisattva way. Then also some pointers as to how this can be done. And the manner it's been done is mentioned under number 2. One must make strong aspiration to take this Bodhisattva vow with determined faith and understanding sincerely in front of a Buddha or great Maha Bodhisattva who has gone forth before us. Then for those who have already taken, you should constantly reflect on the special aspiration. These are all the right views that you vow to have when you come. So 3.1 is right view regards to law karma, law dependent origination or the 12 link and paticchasamuppada, and the 4 noble truth, which is part of Dhamma Niyama. Then 3.2 is to understand the 2 aspects of the 5 aggregate of form and mind clearly. We are the direct seeing, to realize that they are all conditioned arising entity, causal phenomena, hence impermanent, leading to suffering, not me, non-self, and empty. That is this called so-called living being, or 5 aggregates of form and mind, is just a karmically conditioned vehicle and tools for us to use, for us to come to this existential world, to develop the cultivation and experience all of the wonders and beauties of life. So use it with wisdom to arise the right thought, right speech, right action, so that we can be a blessing to all and not to be deluded by it. To constantly recite with understand the following Dhamma profoundly. Starting with Rupang Anicang, Rupang Anatta, then repeat for Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana, so that you clearly understand the 5 aggregates of form and mind, the 2 aspects. They are impermanent, leading to suffering, and because of that, it's not a permanent, unchanging entity. that you can call this is me, this is I. Therefore, all this can be mine. So, the anatta nature, non-self nature, and also empty nature. Then finally, understanding deeply what the Buddha meant by sabbe sankhara anicchang, sabbe sankhara dukkhang, and sabbe dhamma anatta. Then 3.3 is, having developed the above right view, this nature of mind vow always to keep the following three sets of pure precepts following the advice of all Sama Sambuddha. These three sets of pure precepts are very important. They are quite similar to the advice of the Buddha. First one is to avoid all evil and to understand clearly what constitutes evil. That is the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then the next one is to cultivate all virtues and blessings leading to the perfection of them all. Then lastly is to cultivate wisdom to liberate beings and take them all across. So this third one, purification of mind, which is to cultivate wisdom. But here we add in, because the three sets of pure precepts include our first basic bodhisattva vow to help liberate and take across all sentient beings. Then number four is the actual taking of the bodhisattva vow. 4.1, the four basic vow we have gone through. First is this nature of mind vows to liberate the countless living beings from samsara and take them all across to the other shore. Then the second one is this nature of mind vows to endure and severe all suffering of the sections. Then the third one, third basic vow, is this nature of mind vows to cultivate and penetrate all dhammas to realize the perfection of all wisdom. Then the fourth basic vow is this nature of mind vow to perfect the 10 perfections of paramita to realize the unsurpassed Sama Sambuddhahood. Then the additional vow is for you to add on, so that you understand how karmic obstruction can be broken, can be overcome, to bring about the way. Otherwise, this karmic obstruction can obstruct you for a very long time, for many, many lives. So this one all we have gone through, I will skip it. Then after that, you will learn how to break all those coming obstruction. Then you determine not to repeat them. Then after that, you can invoke the power of truth, because of your repentance, and you vow to follow the advice of the Buddha to constantly avoid all evil, do good, and purify your mind. We are striving on your heedfulness to constantly keep the precepts and cultivate the Buddha Dhamma diligently, so that it will not violate all this nature's law, especially the law of karma again, whenever the form and mind arise. Then you can develop the understanding to make use of the power of merits, power of whatever blessing and wholesomeness and merits that you have, your nature has cultivated, for causes and conditions, for you to overcome whatever coming obstruction or coming obstacle amicably, so that this nature of yours will be able to gain back its life. Then after that, walk the path of Dhamma to fulfill and realize all its bodhisattva vow. Then this power of merits can also be used for many other things, to avoid foolish and heedless meet up with the wise and enlightened being so that Nibbana can be realized soon as possible and all those things. Then after that, there are some additional miscellaneous vow to enhance the cultivation. So all this clearly spell out. Then one other 10 perfection is also in the notes. So do go back and constantly reflect on all this so that it will become a part of your nature. Especially this window when you have the condition. If you understand it clearly and can determine it with a lot of faith, sincerity and understanding, this will deepen your understanding. Then this will create the Bodhi mind with this understanding, so that whenever you come or have to come or choose to come, this understanding will be there. Whether it is the Buddha Sasana or no Buddha Sasana, you have planted the seed of Bodhi, you have determined strongly through strong affirmation of understanding and truth, for this understanding to follow your form and mind life after life whenever it arises. So this is something that you need to do for this life, because this window is very important. The moment you set this right, actually it set all of your future coming already in order, so that you don't have to worry anymore. So if you have the understanding, you will come to understand that it's really worthwhile, because just this life, you put in the extra determination and effort, then it paved the way for all of your future existence or coming to be taken care of. It's just like a student. You understand the importance of Form 5, you just work hard on it, Form 4, Form 5, especially Form 5, then manage to do quite well. Even if you have not done very well, as long as you can pass and get you a position in one of the university, even local or overseas, then you already set your future beautifully. Because most people who can gain entry to university, they will pass. Very few will fail. So this is just an analogy to let you understand. You only have to understand that this window is so important, so precious and so supportive. Like I always say, do not miss this window, otherwise it's going to be a long, long haul before this opportunity or this condition sets in again. This life you are in fact very blessed, because for you to have such condition to be born as a human being during this Buddha Sasana, to be born with the understanding of the Buddha Dhamma. Not only born as a human being, you had the condition to encounter the Buddha Dhamma. Then you had the condition to be exposed to such clear understanding of the Buddha Dhamma. So all this, they don't happen by chance. They are there because of your karmic past. Then if you have this condition, if you don't know how to make use of it and set your future firmly via your aspiration and affirmation, you are going to regret it. Because this window is very rare and this understanding is very rare. Just like our opening verse. Okay, now we can go to this invocation of the day verse. Turn to page 6. And after that we will read the opening verse. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the dainties come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samantha Chakawalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammang Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakamokkhadang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Tassa Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sambuddhasa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Oh, sorry. We're supposed to go to Ittipeso, huh? Ittipeso Bhagava Arahang Sama Sambuddho Vijacharana Sampanno Sugato Lokavido Anuttaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Satta Deva Manusanang Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehi Paksiko Opanaiko Pachyatang Veditatbu Vinohiti Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Ujupatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Nyaya patipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Samichi patipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Yadidang Chattari Purisa Yukani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Savakasango Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakineyo Anjali Karaniyo Anuttarang Punyaketang Lokasati Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Rupa Japa. Buddhang Pujayami. Dhammang Pujayami. Sanghang Pujayami. You can be seated, yeah. Then just relax yourself, then we will continue. Okay, we will turn to page 1, verse for opening the sutta. The unsurpassed, profound and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. Okay, then we turn to the page where we stop. page 121. We were at the section on the five spiritual faculties. I think in Mandarin is translated as the five roots. Wuken. Is it correct? Yeah. But you don't get confused now. Well, the sixth sense or the sixth sense basis is also called Liu Ken. So I don't know why Mandarin word they like to use root. Liu Ken. Actually, it's the sixth sense door, sixth sense basis. But anyway, as long as you understand, it's okay. Okay. I think I go backward one or two sentences before that. One sentence. Second last line. If in lecturing you encounter a reference to the five roots and five powers, means the five spiritual faculty and the five powers. As for example, when they appear in the Amitabha Sutta, you are able to explain them correctly. So this one is also within our 37 factors of enlightenment. They are called factors of enlightenment. And within the 30 factors of enlightenment, the five spiritual faculty, they appear twice. The first time as ordinary five spiritual faculty, they are our faith or sadha. Then our virya, or spiritual zeal and spiritual tenacity to walk the path of Dhamma. Then the third spiritual faculty is mindfulness or awareness or sati. Then fourth is samadhi or collectedness of mind, unwavering mind. Then fifth is wisdom. Then when we perfected them until they become unshakable, it becomes balas or powers. So even though it appears twice, so 10 out of 37, but there are a few spiritual faculty which also appear in other of the 37 factors of enlightenment. Like you look at the 7 factors of enlightenment, which is also part of it, you will also see mindfulness as the first factors of enlightenment, then samadhi as the sixth factors of enlightenment, then equanimity as the seventh factors of enlightenment. Actually, equanimity born of wisdom is the correct factor of enlightenment. So they are all repeated. Then when you look at Noble Eightfold Path, there is also right mindfulness, samasati, samasamadhi. So they appear many times. So this shows clearly to you the importance of spiritual faculty, especially sati. Sati or mindfulness appear many, many times within the 37 factors of enlightenment. Okay, we continue. Rather than confusing them and explaining them as the six does, such orderly, correct speaking of Dhamma is an example of the use of the paramita of Dhyan Samadhi in giving. If someone asks you a question and you become flustered and say, I don't know, then your skill in Dhyan Samadhi is one thing. However, even those with samadhi need wisdom. Wisdom enhances the development of eloquence so that left and right, the source is revealed, the way is clear and straightforward. This one you understand, So Samadhi alone is not enough, but it's a power factor by itself. Initially, you need samadhi. The mind has to be unwavering and collected, so that you can see things as they are, so that your mind will not stir in the midst of your daily life when you cultivate your daily mindfulness. Yeah. But samadhi alone, without wisdom, is not enough. That's why when samadhi allow you to see things as they are and awaken, then wisdom arises. It's only when wisdom arises, then the mind becomes truly in equanimity, ping teng sing. The equanimity that is born of wisdom is the real factor of enlightenment, the seven, the last of the seven factors of enlightenment. In Pali, it's called Upekha. Upekha. Okay. So that's why you need wisdom. Because wisdom enhances the development of eloquence, so that left and right, the source is revealed. No matter where you come from, those who have wisdom, they will understand. And they can reveal to you, through whatever teaching, the source of the source of all things. Means from the source everything arises. So the essence of the Buddha Dhamma, of the Buddha's teaching, they arise from that true nature, the original nature, which is the source of all things. So all this, you need wisdom. So when the source is revealed, the way is clear and straightforward. Otherwise, you will have problem. No matter how you speak, you reveal the essence of the principle. See, for those who have wisdom, they are not rigid, they are not deluded. They don't repeat what they heard. They can explain to you in their own words, in simple words. And the Dhamma can be made very clear. So this particular sentence is very important. No matter how you speak, you reveal the essence of the principle, because your wisdom is unobstructed. Means your wisdom is unlimited. That is, you use the paramita of prajna, wisdom, to do whatever in giving. Means the first of the six paramita, dana or generosity. So if you have developed wisdom, you would have perfected it. You will have reached the level of no mark, like the Dhamma Sutta. Thus the three aspects of giving, the giving of materialistic wealth, the giving of Dhamma, and the giving of fearlessness, encompass the six paramita. So in Mahayana, they actually shorten it to six perfections, because to them, these six is very important. When you perfect these six, the other four will fall into place. The Buddha again instructed Subhati, in order for a bodhisattva to benefit living beings, he should give as I have previously stated, while not dwelling anywhere. This is the understanding. When you have no mark of a self-giving, no mark of living being receiving, and no mark of even the idea and concept of giving. That is the true highest level of cultivation. So in order for a bodhisattva to truly benefit living being, he should give as I have previously stated, according to Sakyamuni Buddha, while not dwelling anywhere. The object of the Buddha Dhamma is to rid people of delusion or attachment. Let the gentle breeze and the bright moon shine forth as they may. Let things come naturally. Do not be attached So this is a very powerful saying. Let things come naturally. Means what? They arise through nature's law. So it's just like you are born into this world. This universe of ours, wherever you are, this form and mind. If let's say as a human being on this earth, you want to be a successful, maybe, doctor or engineer or accountant or a professional when you grew up. So you have to work towards it, following nature's law, allowable. If you through deceive or cheat, like you go and buy a degree, you forge all those things, then you are actually committing karmic negativity. So all this will bring about problem. So that's why here the cultivation, it is mentioned by Sakyamuni. Yeah? Let things come naturally. Naturally means through nature's law. Then you have to do it with sincerity. Yeah? You cannot be cunning, deceiving, and all those things. Then do not be attached. Means you don't insist on having it. When you cannot get what you want, you become miserable. Like your ambition, your whatever craving to become. So you work so hard to pass exam and to become successful in your career, but you fail the exam. So what happened here is, do not be attached means accept the reality. If you have cultivated accordingly, if you have studied accordingly, you would have passed. But if you have not, then you will debate. Just like exam, you will not do well because you have failed to understand the subject and the question that has been asked. So all this is the same. So let things come naturally. Do not be attached. This is a very wise sentence. By attaching to mark when giving, you cultivate the rewards of the heaven. Means these are worldly merits, worldly dana parami. But you must truly and actually do it. You cannot say, I'm not attached to mark. This one is word only. you must truly have the understanding. There is really nothing at all. I don't need to do anything. To think like that is to fall into false emptiness. That's why a lot of Dharma practitioner or cultivator, they actually are more interested in the words. Then they use their thought to rationalize. Then you know what they say. Yeah, Brother Teo say no thought. Or the Buddha say no thought. Yeah, I got no thought. But he keep on talking to you and the thought keep on running. He say no thought. But he cannot see that he is heedlessly lost in thought. Actually, the world of thought, that's why I used to share with some of you during the early days, Form 6, when I wrote the essay. The first sentence I wrote about the human mind. Human being is a creature of thought. I wrote that in my Form 6 essay. Human being is a gregarious being. That's why the teacher, when she read, she got a shock. Then after that, she only put forward, rather deeply thought out. He finished. But he corrected my grammar. My grammar was not good at that time. So this English teacher, he knew I was ahead of my time when I wrote that essay. There were many things that my mind has developed the understanding even at a young age. So all this, you will come to understand. When you meditate, when you are mindful, when you cultivate accordingly, then you start to see that living beings are so heedless. They think a lot. They are constantly lost in thought. That's why thought overwhelmed them. They hardly had any space between thought. they are never with the moment. That's why they cannot understand life. They cannot be with the moment in stillness, in silence, in peacefulness. The mind is just aware without thought. If you cannot experience that, if you cannot stabilize that, forget about meditation. No way. All your formal meditation, you focus, you concentrate, you develop the calm mind through forcing it into a conditioned state. That type of peace, that type of calmness, not much use. Unless you know how to release it out, then maintain the stability of that calmness. But chances are you cannot. Because for the mind to be naturally peaceful and calm, you need the spiritual faculty. And if you have the spiritual faculty, it means you have the last spiritual faculty. What is that? Wisdom. That's why without wisdom, your mind cannot be silent, cannot be peaceful, cannot be quiet. We are so capable, it will stir, it will react. We are so conditioned. That's why living being is a bundle of memory with its conditioning, views, opinion, belief system, tradition, everything deposited, accumulated. And from there, you respond, you act through your senses, through your memory. That's why the way you think, the way you arise a thought, the way you live your life is all according to this accumulated bundle of memories. Previous views, opinion, belief system, is conditioning. And all this is what you are. That's why without wisdom to straighten your view, you will continue to become heedless. You will continue to do all those things like the normal living beings or puttajana or an unenlightened being. Means worldly people. That's why the worldly people, in Mandarin you call what? Fan ren. That word, is it fan now the fan? No, or another one. Or ping fan, common people. Actually, you can also translate it as a lot of worry on, a lot of suffering on. So, the commoner or the unenlightened being in Pali they call puttajana. The enlightened one they call Arya. Arya are noble ones. The unenlightened one are called puttajana. So, this puttajana they are heedless. They think a lot. They are constantly lost in thought. They have self-delusion, sakkayaditti, wrong view. And they don't have the Buddha Dhamma. That's why they cannot understand life. They are very difficult for such human beings to actually overcome their suffering. You can only overcome all of your suffering. We are cultivating the Buddha Dhamma to realize its teaching, to awaken to the universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering, state, and non-self. Then to see clearly that all these are not real. Your form and mind is impermanent, lead to suffering, not you, empty. Then the phenomenal world, everything. You have to have that penetrative insight. Then only you can liberate the mind. And when the mind liberates, it realizes itself and ceases, then no more. Means it's no longer deluded or deceived by what the mind creates, by what the mind used to cling on to and hold on to through its earlier delusion. So meditation or cultivation of the Buddha Dhamma is to develop this wisdom, this insight into the characteristics of nature or all phenomena, the universal characteristics of impermanence leading to suffering and non-self. So once you penetrate all this, then the mind becomes different. The mind is not deluded anymore, not deceived by the phenomenal world. Then it can see things as they are, it can understand things very clearly. Then it can understand life, all of nature's law that governs life and existence. And through this understanding, it will be at peace with all things. Yeah. That's why it can echo and flow. And it will understand that they are all not real, not what you think. Yeah. That's why no mark of anything. Yeah. No mark of a self, no mark of living being, no mark of any Dhamma within this world. Yeah. So all this, you can develop the wisdom when you cultivate correctly. So wisdom is most important. Huh? Always remember, without wisdom, nothing free except wisdom. So this word, nothing free you except wisdom, you have to get it right. Huh? I better write it down. It's okay. Nothing frees you. Huh? Except wisdom. When you understand this, you will know how to meditate. You will not be gullible. You will not be deluded. So in the name of meditation, when you can understand this particular sentence, you will not be gullible. Nothing frees you or the five aggregate of form and mind except wisdom. Means what? If you meditate and attach to all the fantastic meditation experience, all the calmness, all the special ability to see light and the various manifestation of mind and all those things, then through that, you think you already enlightened. What happened? Yeah? Have you developed the wisdom, the understanding of who you are, what you are, the understanding of life, what is life, who are you, what are you, and how you function as a human being? And what is this so-called universe, phenomenal world and all those things. If all this also you cannot understand and you say you are really enlightened, that enlightenment is not what the Buddha taught. What the Buddha taught is relating to the Four Noble Truths, which is the essence of his teaching. And that Four Noble Truths is the secret of life. It summarizes to us all of life, both the mundane and the supramundane. So if you don't have that wisdom to understand that Four Noble Truth completely, means to understand life completely, that is not the meditation or enlightenment that the Buddha is talking about. So without wisdom, you will be afflicted. You will have a lot of suffering. You will not have the noble quality of an enlightened being. Yeah. The one that the Buddha defined as enlightened. Yeah. First, you don't have right view. Without wisdom, there is no right view. When your view is wrong, the way you act, the way you speak, and the way you think will go wrong. That's why the whole Noble Eightfold Path falls apart. Yeah. So all this is related to just this understanding. Nothing frees except wisdom. Mm. Very important. So bear this in mind so that you are not gullible, so that you are not trapped in the defilement of insight, so that whatever happened to you in meditation, always go back to this. I need to develop wisdom through a free mind, through a mind that is normal, not in a conditioned state. That's why in the midst of life, you must have this ability to be at peace, to be with the moment, to have this ever mindfulness. Not only you train your mind to be mindful, that's why the spiritual faculty, you have to perfect it until it's ever mindful. Means it has become power, balance. So when you are ever mindful, then only you can be heedful. Means ever mindful throughout the day in the midst of life. To cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, to perfect the Noble Eightfold Path. So this is the most important. Okay? Can follow, huh? So now we slowly go into all this understanding. And unknowingly, if you really pay attention, it will actually slowly straighten your view. And not long after you contemplate this and understand, you will transform. You will have less wrong view, less thinking. That avijja paccaya sankhara will be attenuated, means reduced. Then you got less sankhara, means less mental activity. Then a lot of things, you are not deluded anymore, you are not deceived anymore. Then that wisdom will allow you to free your mind. You will not stir your mind, you will not react like before. You will not complain, argue, create division, deceived by thought. You will not be heedlessly lost in thought like before. Most of the time you are silent, peaceful, and just aware. Then you understand clearly, for my mind is for my mind, not me. That's why your self-delusion, sakyadity, selfishness, craving, desire, envy, jealousy, they will fade away. Then the phenomenal world of consciousness, you will see them clearly. Then the phenomenal world of form, you will see them clearly. That's why you can see form, the unreality of form. Then you can see beyond form. So similarly, the mind aggregate also same. Then you realize the five aggregate of form and mind, they are all impermanent, leading to suffering. That's why it's empty. It's not self. He know you, he know me. No mark of a self, no mark of a living being, no mark of any Dhamma. These are for the conditioned world, existential world. That's why the Heart Sutta is very beautiful. In true emptiness, all this gonna exist. Even though they are all the teaching of the Buddha. Because this is for the conditioned world, existential world, mundane world. Okay? Can follow, Sadhu. Then also, do listen to the recording of last Sunday, Wu Ping Ching Sa. It's a very, very good talk, I tell you. It links the Hui Ning's cultivation. Hui Ning, the six patriarchs, advice to the people on how to cultivate. So I link it up with what I shared with you. Then I also link to Sakyamuni's four foundations of mindfulness. How to develop the understanding. I give a lot of examples too. That this talk was very, very good. So one day we see how you got condition. Somebody go and do the transcript. That one will be very good, I tell you. Sumaila. Oh, good. Oh, she want to do a sadhu to lesson. Yeah, the first part. The first part. Even later on, the meditation also, okay, very good. The meditation there, because it's about half an hour. Then after that, I think we got not much time left. I think Man Yuan asked some question and also did some sharing. And it was very good too. So that day one was very good. And I explained it very clearly. That's why a lot of people thought they know the Four Noble Truths. They thought they understood the Satipatthana Sutta, the four foundations of mindfulness. They thought they have attended retreat, workshop, and all those things, and some study in Abhidhamma form. But when you listen to that sharing of mine, you will come to realize that you have not really understood. You have not cultivated accordingly. You go and listen. That one was very beautiful. That's why all along, I don't have much condition to explain that whole cultivation, even though in the yellow book I explained before. But that time, because the topic was so wide, so I rushed through quite a bit of them, because I had to cover those topics and all those things. But last Sunday, I only need to cultivate one aspect which was very, very beautiful and very complete. Where it was linked to Hui Ning's sharing. Then from there, I linked it to the four foundations of mindfulness. Because like I used to explain, living being or cultivator, Dharma practitioner, they don't understand a very key important message of the Buddha, the importance of the spiritual faculty to overcome the mental hindrance. So if you don't understand that, you cannot begin actually. You cannot even start. And when you cannot understand that, you cannot understand why all who go for meditation, you are given the object of meditation or a method and a technique to do your meditation. Actually, this is all not meditation at all. These are skillful means to train the mind. Here the mind is heedless. And because it is heedless, the mental hindrances are there. That's why it hinders you from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner calmness. If you don't understand all this, you cannot start your meditation. You can't even overcome them. That's why in the four foundations of mindfulness, when it comes to the actual cultivation of Dhamma Nupassana, actual cultivation of the Dhamma to understand his teaching. The first category of cultivation is mindfulness of the five mental hindrances. And that one also people cannot understand how to cultivate. They go and not know. Then what the Buddha say, so far I haven't heard anybody able to explain it. You go and listen to that talk, that recording. I think one of the Kayanamita from Alastair, I think if I'm not wrong, is Panchi. I think she listened to it so many times. At least she also listened to it twice, I think. I think that one, she finds it so beautiful because the explanation was so clear and the example I give was so clear. That's why I wanted that sharing to be in that format. I slow everything now. Now is the time where all the Dhamma are there, but because last time I had to cover them and a lot of them are recorded in the Heart Sutta notes, short notes. Then some are in the transcript. So you have enough of the teaching, the Dhamma. But the cultivation part is the thing. So like I used to explain in the Klang talk also. You have to understand the phase one of Dhamma, Pariyatti. Means understand the essential Dhamma as taught by the Buddha clearly. That's why you have to pay a lot of attention. Listen, then write it down. When you write it down, then only you will come to know whether you have understood it or not. Because without the notes, or without listening, the moment after you listen, you try to write it out without referring to any notes. If you can do it, means you have the understanding of the Dhamma. And that is just the beginning, you know. You just understand what this thing is. But to put it into practice is the phase two Dhamma, Patipatti. Most of the time, you don't believe me, you cannot write it out. You cannot even like sentence by sentence highlight the important and link all the essential Dhamma. You must refer to note. It's okay to refer to note or listen again. Then you draw it out like a flow chart or what. Then you make your note. Then after that, like exam, study, prepare for exam before the exam, what you do? All your notes, your short note. If you read lecture note, if the lecturer is not a good one, you cannot understand. Because he simply write on the board all over one. He is not systematic one. So you don't have proper notes. So what I normally do is, I will go and modify his note and put it in my own words so that I can understand. Then when that day or two before exam, I just flick through, I can understand already. Because this note are made in such a way that it has the understanding there. I mean, I understand it because I rewrite it out. Then when I go for exam, it's very easy. Because with this, I can actually flick through the whole year syllabus within maybe 1 hour. Or sometimes if I'm very familiar already, half an hour I finish it. That's why I don't have to prepare for exam or what. And most of the time, all those things are already there, the understanding. But I only need to refresh. That's why I flick through. Because our exam is different. They are testing you on memory. So our British system is a lot of knowledge on. They don't test you on practical things on. Because the moment they set practical question which is outside the normal syllabus or what they call model answer question, students will find it very difficult to answer them. Because you have to have the strong understanding from first principle. So most of the Malaysian students who did very well in exam, they gone through model answer one. Pass your question and all those things. All this, they already practice, understand? They already practice and they remember them, understand? So things that you are exposed to, you know how to do. But when it comes to new thing, like if they rephrase the question and they were to test you from first principle, like you never seen this type of questioning before. And the moment they start to ask you question in that way, you cannot answer already. Most of our students cannot answer. Only those who really study understanding one can answer. Because in our final year, I remember, there was one lecturer who never follow past year question. And he never give you any notes that is linked to the exam question he said on. He just teach you the basic principle, the understanding. Then the question he said is very practical one, from field experiences on, actual practical case from outside on, real life case, soil mechanic, the lecturer, that paper. And that paper I did so well, no? I answered extra one question. We only need to answer five. I think I answered six. And I got an A plus for him. You know, I was very good in that particular topic. So it depends on how you study and how you understand. That's why to me, I study with understanding. If I don't understand, I don't start. I don't want to do. When I came out to work also same. If my supervisor or immediate superior or my boss give me an assignment, I have to understand the background. I have to understand the reason behind all this. Then I got the full picture. Then I only know what to do. Then I will start. Otherwise, I don't understand. That's why I ask for the file and all those things. And the boss will know, this person is very different. He is very thorough. He look at the big picture. He don't just, whatever people ask you to do, you just do. Like meditation, you become gullible. Okay, note this, note that. Do breathing, do anapanasati, do. Why do? Never tell you. Anasana. Then like you say, you go and work this out. I will never do that. Well, I want to know what is this for. So even though I was in JKR at that time, waterworks, it was a completely new field. Waterworks, water supply. So because of the general understanding of water supply that were taught to us, the one who taught us was very good. He was the Director General of Waterworks, JKR. Chan Bun Teck, I remember, he got a lot of joke on. Most of it is dirty joke on. But his class is very humorous on. After 6 on the class, always, after work, then only he come. But because he's so good, he just teach us the understanding of all this. Then from what he taught, I developed the understanding very fast. And I like this style of lecturer who already work in the private sector, very experienced. Then he can share with you all those. That's why it's very easy to grasp that thing. Then when I came out, I was posted to a slang or waterworks. That's why I did very well there. I understand very fast. Then the one of the, I think, Pengarah, he liked me, Chan Chiang Heng. He, at first, when I report for work, I was assigned to a T DA, where this DA is very experienced. So I worked under him. Then later on, a senior engineer came. Then we worked under him. Then later on, this Chan Chiang Heng took over and became the Pengarah. And when he became Pengarah, I don't know why, he liked me. So he used to call me down one day. Mr. Teo, can you do me a favor? Wow, I felt so shy, you know. Pengarah, you know, the Director General of Waterworks Langor asked you, a fresh engineer, a few months only, for favor, you know. Can you do me a favor? I need to, you know. That's why they say his approach was so good. You will never refuse what he asked you to do. And because I have this understanding and my approach is so different, he liked me so much. You know. Then he let me try a lot of new things. You know. But there are certain things that I realized that I put in the calculation. Then I see him. You know. Then I talk to him. I say, this one, because it's also non-conventional one. Most of the time, the design or treatment plan, quite standard one, quite conventional one. Then the consultant are appointed. Then all the engineers, most of them copy their design. You know. But this time, he want me to do a simple one, very cheap one, modified approach. And I was thinking, but he also like to do this one, the Pengarah. So I did it, you know, and he was so happy, you know, that somebody able to do what he want to do with so much lower the cost. You know. Then after that particular pumping station, or they call the well that I supposed to pump, I don't know why, you know, first time I did know. And I told him, I said, there is a risk. He said, what risk? I said, if our pump is pumping too fast, then this water will all be sucked out very fast. Then the amount of water flowing in to that, what they call, that cylinder, where there is a big reservoir, then we have a pump sum, where there is a cylinder. So this one, he want to do a temporary one. He go and stack up the cupboard, design all the bracket to lock it down. Then there is a foundation down there. Then because I know buoyancy, you know, I say the buoyancy force is very big. I say we have to put in the reinforcement, everything. And then he look at me, you know. He say, you sure or not? He say, water, you know. I say, yeah, when you pump too fast, the amount of water going in is so slow, you have this, what they call, empty suck sum inside there. So the buoyancy force is equivalent to the water display, you know. So I calculated the force was so big, you know. He said, okay, then you take care of it. So I took care of it. Then I told the contractor, you know, you have to build it monolithic, you know. You cannot separate, you know. My technician cannot understand, you know. Then the contractor also just do, like any standard concreting, do the base first, put in the pipe, then concrete again, then it becomes non-monolithic. No? That means two separate casting. No? And I tell you, when they did the commissioning, my technician called me. No? He said, Mr. Teo, something wrong, explosion inside the pond. Then I told my Pengarah, I said, yeah, buoyancy. He said, you sure? Actually, he was very busy. No? Okay, I go down with you. Then he went down with me. Then he saw the thing. Then I explained to the contractor. Then the contractor said he didn't understand. That's why he rebuilt the whole thing. Then he put in the reinforcement, cast monolithic based on my calculation. Exactly, doesn't happen again after that. See, a lot of things you cannot see. Even first time I did, I can see why, because I very thorough and I understand buoyancy and all those things. So understanding is very important for you to understand clearly whatever you do. Ability to see the big picture is very, very important. Every field that you want to be successful in, you have to have the thorough understanding, the complete understanding if possible. Okay? So Dhamma is the same. Okay, we go on. All marks, next page. All marks are spoken of by the Tathagata as no mark. Basically, all marks are devoid of mark. And all living beings are spoken of as no living being. Originally, their self nature is Buddha, but now because they are confused, they become living being. So this one you understand, isn't it? Before the first thought of ignorance, they are from the self nature. So that's why it's already complete. Complete doesn't mean that there is wisdom. No. Complete means there is no defilement, no stirring, nothing. Just the pure nature. Cannot come out, cannot do anything. So this pure nature, before it's defiled, is already complete. So originally their self nature is Buddha. But now because they are confused, they become living being. Confused means deluded. The first thought of ignorance, the condition, and make them what they are. So they grasp at the knowing. So this knower or knowing become the living being, traveler in space and time. Then mind through consciousness created the world and the continent. So that's how everything arises. The form and mind, the five degree of form and mind, the living being. Self-delusion grasps at the top. And through that perception, they think there is a thinker behind the thought. There is a knower. So the knower becomes the living being. So that's why you grasp as a self, thinking that you are real. Yeah. Then when you grasp at the self, this living being becomes entangled. That's how law of karma has its power. So it becomes traveler in space and time. Why? Because it continuously takes repeated birth, understand not? Birth and death due to delusion. The moment you grasp at the living being as you, self-delusion will condition your rebirth. And you will forever trapped in the wheel of samsara. That's why traveler in space and time for eternity. Not until you develop the condition to awaken, to liberate the mind. Okay? Can I understand? And we go on. Once enlightened, they become Buddhas. If you use the Buddha Dhamma to teach and transform living beings in the future, all of them can return to the source or the origin and realize Buddhahood. So this is very true. List his word caused people to become frightened, terrified, or doubtful. Sakyamuni Buddha assured Subhati, the Tathagata's words are true and honest. They are frank and to the point, means direct to the point. The Buddha does not lie. Everything he said contains the principle of true suchness. See, suchness is the reality. Tathagata. That's why he's called the Tathagata. The Tathagata does not speak false word, nor does he expound strange or weird principle designed to arouse panic and alarm to the heart of his listener. Okay, we stop here. You got any question or not? Ah, yes. Pass the mic to Hui Ling.
I have come across a CD not too long ago. It's actually it's a talk that's given by this Ajahn Brahm in one of the meditation retreats. So because the recording is not so clear, so I've listened some and I didn't listen some. One of the statements that he made is that he say you need to go into jhana in order to enlighten, and he emphasized a lot about the jhana and vittas. And what confused me is that one hand he's talking about letting go, you know, no expectations, and you know, free your mind. And on the other hand, then he's emphasized a lot about nimitta and this jhana.
Yeah.
Because nimitta and jhana to me is just merely a word. So I don't have a deep study on that.
Yeah.
So maybe you can clarify, you know, about this nimitta and jhana.
First of all, in order to avoid misunderstanding, please listen carefully. Otherwise, you can create a lot of misunderstanding, because I think he is very famous. A lot of people like him. He is very humorous. He actually, during the early days, he has a very strong viewpoint about jhana. He used to have that very strongly. He said you must go into deep state of mind and all those things. Of course, nimitta, all those things. Then he, I think these are the talk from the early days one. Then later on, I realized somebody gave me a book. I don't know where the book is. All of a sudden, quite recently, last few years, I think, he started to talk about mindfulness. Then nowadays, very seldom he emphasized on jhana and all those things again. But anyway, we respect him for what he is, because he is also trained through the Ajahn Chah lineage, understand not? So he also has his understanding and his whatever training. So we respect him for what he is. So there is no comment of whether right or wrong. Okay? So as per what you explain based on your very little, what they call, like you say, you hear some here, some there. You didn't have the time to finish the whole listening because it was not that clear, the recording. As pointed out by you, is very true. The two part that he explained, if you have the understanding, you will know it contradict each other. Well, one is about the conditioned mind, deep state of mind in jhana. Then the other one is let go, free the mind, and all those things. So that is one point which you yourself also manage to develop the understanding. That's why to you it's like it contradicts itself. But different people approach meditation differently. The more important is to understand the big picture, understand? No point arguing about whether you need jhana. Because now the topic again has surfaced. That in the past, the jhana viewpoint gained a lot of prominence. Understand not? And very few people dare to go against that. Because they quote from the sutta. The arahant or the enlightened being. They can add their own will at any time. Go into all this jhana and all those things. Then there are also occasion where you look at the teaching the Buddha himself actually went through. He also perfected all the jhana, but then he realized he was still not enlightened, understand? He followed the two teachers. Then finally, underneath the Bodhi tree, when he didn't go into all the deep jhana, he only went into the first jhana, which is still at the clarity mind state of upacara samadhi. Then he was able to develop the condition to connect and to understand the whole thing. But all this you must also bear in mind, because he has his past. He has perfected it. That's why he has the reason why he had to wait. He has to wait for 6 years. Yeah, these are the conditions that comes with his nature. One of the conditions is Sujata, who offer the mug rice. They make vow to offer, and they have the condition. That's why you have to wait till he offered. Then only after that, Sakyamuni can become enlightened. Then the other reason is the two teachers, Alara and Udaka, because they have such firm belief that their meditation that they have developed is the ultimate. To them, it's the ultimate. Means enlightenment. There is no more beyond that. So because of that, their views are so strong, they have determined so strongly, they have to die before the Buddha become enlightened. Otherwise, they will become enlightened very fast. But because they determined to take birth there so strongly, that's why the condition arise and they will have to die and be there. So this is the part that makes it very clear about the argument of whether you need jhana or not. You can understand the part in that. Means jhana not necessarily make you enlightened. Where the Buddha went through it. Understand not? So there is an established point. And when the Buddha come out and teach, he always emphasize on heedfulness. And what is heedfulness? Nothing to do with jhana. Then you look at the Noble Eightfold Path. There is no path factor called samajhana. Understand not? But the word samadhi is there. And they interpret samadhi as jhana. Those who are pro-jhana. So we are not arguing, yeah? Please don't get me wrong. Eh? I just want to explain to you clearly how you can understand all this so that you are not trapped and you are not like gullible. For me, all these are not important. I just want to go into the original teaching to understand clearly what the Buddha actually taught. Understand? If he has meant that jhana, he would have used the word samajhana instead of samasamadhi. Understand not? And those who do jhana, you realize or not, they never have daily mindfulness. Unless they release the concentration out and go into daily mindfulness. And the four foundation of mindfulness, which is the only way, as explained by the Buddha, ekayano bhikkhave bhikkhu, he told the monk, the only way for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for realizing the right enlightenment and all those things. Namely, the four foundation of mindfulness. And he told the monk, this is the only way, O monk, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for the realization of the right path leading to the enlightenment, Nibbana. Then he explained the four foundation of mindfulness and other things. So if you look at the four foundation of mindfulness, there is nowhere he mentioned about jhana, understand? Each and every foundation, there is no mention. Anapanasati also, the first part only, just to develop mindfulness of the in and out breath. Then use that to develop the understanding. Then after that, go into the four posture, mindfulness of the four posture. Then after that, mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action and all movement in the midst of life. That's why all this will allow you to understand what he is trying to teach you. Then all these essential dhammas spring off from the Four Noble Truths, like what I was able to explain to you all and link them all up. The reason why they develop jhana and concentration is, like all the Hindu and all those things, is because they fail to understand that without the spiritual faculty, the mental hindrance will be there. And you cannot meditate. You cannot develop the inner peace, the inner calmness, and inner awareness. But what they did was, where they know the mind cannot be peaceful, cannot be calm, they go into jhana, they go into one-pointedness, into concentration, into absorption. Then they force the mind to be silent. That's why I say it's a conditioned state. Then this mind is very peaceful, very calm. But it is a conditioned state. It's not a free mind. During that state, all the mental hindrance, they are suppressed, cannot come out. That's why you cannot test yourself. You cannot know whether you really have the wisdom to to deal with them or not when they arise. Then when you do all this jhana, they come out with a different, what they call, explanation about insight, enlightenment and all those things. So they say through jhana, they can look at the body, means through that vision, the image, and they can see the nine stages of cemetery decomposition because they use thought to will it. Understand? And all these are still thought-based meditation. And they fail to understand clearly what sati is. That is the other problem. Then how to link all the essential Dhamma as taught by the Buddha, the advice of the Buddha, leading to the teaching of the puja, the precepts and all those things. And the various skillful means to train the mind, then to develop the spiritual faculty. Then from the spiritual faculty, how the meditative state come about. Because with the spiritual faculty, the five mental hindrances cease by itself. So all these are more important for you to understand so that you cultivate accordingly, rather than go and create more doubt and argue, is this necessary, is this not necessary. Then you say, some say necessary, some say no. Then some, they are so convincing. They can give you a lot of examples. They quote a lot of sutta too. To me, it's not important because it does not link. And the Buddha has done it and he doesn't get it. Then I went into it during the early day. I also got caught inside there until I met my teacher, Acharyantra, when he told me about the highest meditation, which was aware every moment, every movement in the present moment. Then only I realized I have not done this meditation. Means this is daily mindfulness. Then I realized when I am not in anapanasati or mindfulness of the in and out breath, well, I did it until very strong. When I was in the midst of life, I was hardly aware. Not even for 5-10 minutes a day throughout the day. Split second, the mind wanders off, become heedless. Then I realized I have not started the real meditation. That's why after that, the mind, the understanding from the nature come again. Then it determined. Because at that same time, this teacher, Acharyantra, he said, who wants to promise to develop this daily mindfulness, you see, until become enlightened? So we thought, he asked, who want to make the promise to him? So I remember I put up my hand straight away without hesitation. Then there was another guy somewhere. Then after that he said, oh, only two. He said, very good. Remember, you all promised the Buddha, not me. Means he wants you to have the faith. And because you promise, you have to do it until you get it. Understand? And within 2 weeks, I did. The daily mindfulness came. Then only I understood what sati is. Then I reversed my cultivation. I released all my anapanasati, absorption and concentration, out into daily mindfulness. Then I start all over again. That's why later on when I sit, I just relax, silent, and just aware. And my silent mind come back. Because I realize after that, the spiritual faculty stabilized. Then after the spiritual faculty stabilized, I realize I can sit very easily. I don't need the breathing after that. No need object of meditation. That's why I can share with you all how the meditation come about. Then I realize my mind is all already in sati, silent, all the time. Then it just aware on its own. It don't need any object of meditation to fix it. But people who don't have this ability, they cannot. Because by the time I shift the cultivation, my right view, my understanding of the Dhamma is already very strong. Very, very strong. Where I learned from Acharyantra too. Then my past and all those things. And the thing he teach me are nothing to do with the Dhamma one. Like I used to share with you, or you all look through the Heart Sutta note, you will know. Even last Thursday, I shared again. Then last Tuesday also, I think we share. Then Wu Ping Ching Sir also we share. He just say we choose accept everything as natural. Only mighty nature rolling by. This is not in the Dhamma book, Anasana. Not in the teaching. Then when he told me the first thing about body and mind, he said body is just a body, mind is mind, mind never the body never the mind. We choose the care mind. Then body important too. You must harmonize with the mind. So all these it come from its own understanding and contemplation. Then the highest meditation also same. Then we choose accept everything as natural. such powerful statement is not from the Dhamma, understand not? But these are understanding that he developed on his own through his own cultivation. Therefore, those who have the past or have the understanding, the moment I heard this word, it was so beautiful, you know, it just went in. You know. That's how I straightened my view, and I was able to do all these things very fast. But the main thing is, I have very strong faith in him, where I can feel him, his energy, his mindfulness, his loving kindness. Then I can also understand his Dhamma, which was very beautiful. He teach about nature. Yeah. And he always say, life itself is our greatest teacher. Nature is our greatest teacher. Then he always talk about the great loving kindness of nature. Nature just give, give and give, never take. The air we breathe, the water we drink, all of the things that we receive from nature, nature never complain. What do we give back to nature? Huh? What do you give back to nature? All your polluted thought and consciousness for those who are heedless and deluded. Then your whatever waste product from your body, anasa, your fart, your shit and all those things. Then you tend to pollute nature. Then nature, even like a tree, they provide so much resources for mankind. They even endure the sunlight and provide us with a shade so that we can sit underneath there comfortably. And yet, what did we do to the tree? We chop. We destroy. Then sometimes we even urinate under the tree or do those funny things under the tree. Then when we go for picnic, you litter around. That's why the beaches are all polluted. The park and all are polluted. You need people to clean them up. So all these are the natural teaching that come through his own understanding. It's not from the book. That's why the real teaching is from the four foundation of mindfulness, the daily mindfulness. It is during the daily mindfulness that you have interaction with fellow living being, with the environment, with nature. And through your senses, that's how you interact with the world. That's how you know the world. That's how you communicate with the world. That's how you understand yourself. That's how you understand life. That's how wisdom comes to be. Then when you understand life, you know how to live. Then when you know who you are, what you are not deluded. So all these are more important than arguing about, yeah, jhana and other things. To me, forget about it. Then now latest, last few years came out, another group of monks now, they say there are two types of jhana. One is the concentration one. One is the wisdom one. Our wisdom also got jhana now. Yeah. Means your level of wisdom will make your mind calm and still and peaceful up to what level. So this second group is not so bad. But because they want to win the argument, they also want to come near to the teaching. If you are a true cultivator, like the Buddha say, the Buddha Dhamma, the true Dhamma is Pachetang, can be realized by the wise, each for themselves. Why do you need to check and argue with people? Understand? If it's the truth, you just check the salutation to the Dhamma. What is the Dhamma that the Buddha talking about? What are the characteristics of this Dhamma? That's why Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo, the Buddha say, well expounded is the Dhamma by the Buddha. And what are the characteristics of this Dhamma? This Dhamma is, the Buddha say, sanditiko, can be realized in the here and the now. Then akaliko, beyond thought, beyond mind. Then it can be investigated into ehipasiko. Then opanaiko, this Dhamma leading into the heart. Then pachetang, veditakbo, we know hiti. Pachetang means can be realized by the wise, each for themselves. So if you check your cultivation against all this, if none of these are there, then definitely it's not the Dhamma that the Buddha talking about, anasana. Any of this part talk about jhana? the Dhamma must have jhana? None, isn't it? Enlightenment in the here and now. Yeah? Means sanditiko. Then akaliko, beyond thought, beyond mind. What you are doing is all thought based. Even the jhana, the five jhanic factor, what are they? First two is what? What are the first two jhanic factor? Vitaka, vichara. What are they? Apply thought and sustain thought. It's very clearly thought based. Then go and focus on it some more. That's why develop one pointedness. Then out of the five, four of them are not enlightenment factor. Only the third one, piti, where when you become calm and peaceful, not due to mindfulness, piti will also arise. The mind that is calm and peaceful will have piti. But after that, you will go into sukha, extreme blissfulness, because of the strong concentration in jhana. Then after that, the mind is like locked inside there, one-pointedness. Lock. That's why no thought. Why? Because all thoughts are locked into one point. The thought that cannot move, say no thought, understand or not? But that thought is still a thought. That's why one-pointedness is still a thought, but no movement there. And that thought hold on to its movement through energy field. That's why it's a conditioned state. So forget about it. As far as I'm concerned, you can experience it. Because you can experience it, then develop the whatever understanding, then come out of it. If you are willing to come out of it and not so rigid to believe what they tell you, then you can become enlightened very fast. Because such people who has developed the ability to control their mind to such level, they have certain ability. So if they can follow the instruction of the Buddha to release the mind to normal awareness, then go into the four foundation of mindfulness, they will develop very fast. Because actually, to go into all those concentration, you need a lot of energy, a lot of determination, a lot of focusing. But people like that, you know why? Because energy field, got thing to show, like magic, like that, honestly. So I hope I have shared with you the appropriate understanding. So don't argue with people. Let them say what they like. More important thing is investigate into the Dhamma, like the Buddha said. Then use the mic.
I actually didn't finish all the so-called listening of the recording. Because when he touched about the nimittas and jhana, I was what is that? So I just know. What surprised me is that, no, he's talking a lot about wisdom, letting go and all this. Then all of a sudden he jumped into this nimittas.
Like contradictory.
So that's why I'm just trying to clarify, you know, why
so contradictory. It's very good. Yeah, it's very good. Because at least you ask, then we can share this. But like I said, don't create unnecessary misunderstanding. We have to respect them for what they are. So no right, no wrong. People are entitled to their own understanding, their own way of delivering the Dhamma. He also helped many people. He also did a lot of wholesome things. He also he took over that monastery in Serpentine, is it? Yeah, Perth there. Last time they were together, I think, as founder or what. The first abbot was Ajahn Jagaro. Ajahn Jagaro, I know him very well. He was very close to me when he came to Malaysia in the year 1992, I think. 91 or 92, I forgot already. Or 90, I forgot. I met him. They invited him over. Then that time, my teacher, Achayantra, the Aravamanda, also visited him at his temple there. Then there was a forest fire at that time. I told you all before that. Then, surprisingly, after the whole thing burned with the soot all day clear, But the monastery building were all intact. And this year in May, we went there. We all have a trip. We were invited by Brother Xia and the wife Peng, Sister Peng. They were very beautiful Kayamitas. They were very good hosts. They actually take care of us so well. And they were so generous. They led us to their bungalow. They bought one resort bungalow at Lanslin. Lanslin is near the seaside resort area. Then he invited all Kayamita, I think about, 16 of us or 20 of us, I forgot. We all stayed at a very nice place. Then, of course, he also invited me to Perth to give a talk at the Perth House at the one of the night later on. Then they were very generous. They blanja us and all those things and took us around. So this is a beautiful way. Then they started the Dhammasala Nunnery. It was also very beautiful. Then he took us to this Jhana Grove, which is Ajahn Brahm's place. Then also the main temple. I don't know what they call it already. What is the name, Professor? You remember? The main temple? The Ajahn Brahm? Oh, you didn't go? Oh, you were in Melbourne only. Anybody can remember the... what is the name? Bohinyana, I think. Bohinyana, I think. I think could be Bohinyana. But the new area where they built, further out of the monastery, is still within the same locality, but slightly further away, is the nunnery, I think. That nunnery, they call Jhana Grove, also very nice place, very nice place. I don't know whether it's a nunnery or not. Is it a nunnery? Nunnery, the main one is Dhammasala. Then that Jhana Grove is for men or for lady? I also cannot remember. I think it's for lady, mainly. They raised quite a lot of money to build it. I think Australian almost 5 million to build that one. But they got a lot of funding. That's why I say he's very popular and he has helped many people too. So we need to respect them for what they are. So you can develop understanding, then you can actually make your own conclusion, then cultivate accordingly. More important is you can understand the essential Dhamma, then you know how to cultivate, you know how to move. Don't be gullible, that's it. Different people has different method, technique. Sometimes if they understand, finally they will develop the same understanding. They will realize that these are all method and technique only. Nothing to do with the meditation. These are skillful means to train the mind, that's it. So when you understand, then no different. Then the essential Dhamma is still the essential Dhamma. Finally you have to come back to the essential Dhamma. Otherwise you cannot understand the Buddha's teaching. You cannot awaken. Oh, we better stop. But that one fast 8 minutes. Don't worry. So we are slightly exceeded our 10:30. I think it's about 10:35. Okay, maybe we'll stop here. So sadhu for all the good questions and sharing. So we rejoice. Sadhu. Okay, let us now do the sharing of merits. We will recall to mind all of the wholesomeness that we have developed through today's sharing. Let us now share all these merits with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva Cirang rakan tu lokasasana itta watta caamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. อิมีนาปุญญังคาเมนะมามิบาลาสมากโมสัตตังสมากโมโหตุยาวะนิวานาปัตติยาสาธุสาธุสาธุ Okay, let us pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha Sakyamuni. Kuan Yin Bodhisattva and all the worthy ones. Thank you.